Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Friday, March the 17th. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you. We didn't do anything for St. Patrick's Day, but nevertheless, I know a lot of people like to go out and have something enjoyable to eat and drink. And here in Texas, lots of the restaurants were ready for St. Patrick's Day. Tonight, we're going to be chatting with our good friend, Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. We'll be talking about the 2024 campaigns. A little bit of the international situation, how that could impact those campaigns. And then we'll take a look at the House and the Senate, like we always do with Barry. So let me say hello to our friend Barry up in Minnesota. Barry, how's the weather up there?
Well, it's a little cool today, but we're going to be warm for the next couple of weeks. It's a warm-up time.
All right. And the baseball season coming up in a couple of weeks, so I bet people up there are excited about their Twins and getting ready for that. When I lived up in the Midwest, this time of the year was exciting to me because of the baseball season coming, and the baseball season, of course, means the beginning of spring. So I don't know which one I wanted more, baseball or spring, but they were synonymous to me, Barry.
Yes, well, I'm looking forward to the baseball season as well. I don't know how my Yankees are going to do, but Aaron Judge is back. He's already hit a home run in spring training, so hopefully we'll see another interesting and great season from him.
That's right. Well, he should do very well. He's at the top of his game right now, so you would expect him to have another great season. Well, let's get into our topic. Three big topics tonight, the upcoming presidential election, and then related to that is the international situation, how it could impact, and then the House and the Senate. So which one would you like to take first? Of those three topics, which one would you like to go with first?
Well, let's go with the presidential race.
All right, let's do it.
Well,
all right, yeah. No, okay, so let me set it up this way, and I think that right now there's a lot of uncertainty in both parties. Even though, you know, everybody's already taking polls between, you know, Biden and Trump, I'm not even sure those two are going to be the candidates because I think it's all very uncertain at the moment, Barry. What do you think?
I think so, too. Now, the Democrats so far have been successful in keeping any serious candidates from opposing President Biden. But the problem for them is that Mr. Biden is not even that popular among his own party. In fact, depending on which poll you look at, about half of the Democrats want somebody else to run for president, and much more than half want somebody else in the vice presidential ticket. So the Democratic ticket, even though there's only one major announced candidate, Mary Ann Williamson is also in the race, but she's not considered at this point a major candidate. Although, frankly, the bench for the Democrats is so weak, apparently, that we don't know who major candidates would be, even if they did come into the race. On the other hand, Republicans...
Yeah. Let me do a follow-up on the Democrats before we get to the Republicans. Because what I see in 2024, what I see right now for the Democrats is a situation very similar to 2020 in this respect. In 2020, they had a lot of people who wanted to run. but there was really only one who had a chance to defeat President Trump, and that was Mr. Biden. He was the only one with any kind of a chance, and he did win, but by a small margin. I feel the Democrats are in the same boat right now, that they have a lot of people who may want to run, but they're just not the kind of candidates who could win the election. Do you agree with me?
Right, but I think it's not just because of the candidates. I think it's the situation. I mean, the Democrats are on defense. There's problems everywhere you look, domestically and internationally, economically and politically. They have serious problems. And the public, I believe, is beginning to turn away from the more radical direction of the Biden administration and the Democratic Party. So it's not just they lack a strong candidate. They don't have the issues. But it remains to be seen whether the Republicans will exploit this circumstance, because even though the Republicans have several serious candidates, I think the race is essentially, when we get to the early primaries, a race between former President Trump, Governor DeSantis.
Mm-hmm. On the Republican side, yes, you're right. What about the Vice President, Mrs. Harris? How much of a factor is she, plus or minus, for the Democrats?
Well, she's a huge minus.
Mm-hmm.
If Biden's the top of the ticket, because he'll be 82. He's obviously not in the best of shape. He's frail.
Mm-hmm.
And the possibility he may not finish the term would mean she would be president. And she is very unpopular, even among Democrats, and doesn't have anyone's real respect because of her performance as vice president so far. So unless President Biden is willing to change his vice president, and so far he has not indicated he will, I think he has a problem, because she will not help the ticket in any way that I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a few interesting choices I've written about. Probably most interesting is the Secretary of Commerce, Gina Raimondo, the former governor of Rhode Island and now Secretary of Commerce, and who's actually a very serious person and would be much more comfortable for Democrats knowing that she was the backup of the president should anything happen. So, God forbid. But I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think he's put himself in a corner on the vice, not only on the vice presidential choice, but the party has put itself in a corner by discouraging anybody from running and there being a challenge. Now, there's a good reason why that's so, because historically, when you have a challenge to a sitting president running for his second term, when you have a challenge, even if it's not successful, as it wasn't. Jimmy Carter was challenged by Ted Kennedy, who didn't win, but that weakened the ticket significantly, and Carter lost to Ronald Reagan. And a situation somewhat similar, because there was an economic problem, and of course there was a dire international scene with the Iranian hostages, which sealed the deal against Jimmy Carter.
Right.
There was also,
if you remember, Barry, Buchanan challenged President Bush in 92. And that
right.
particular challenge didn't go very far, but it certainly hurt President Bush, I think.
I think it hurt him a lot.
No question about that, yes.
Good example. I was on the floor of the Republican National Convention when Buchanan made his speech denouncing Bush, and which was a very damaging speech. Incidentally, one of the persons I ran into, I was a journalist with credentials. I was on the floor, and I ran into a fellow named George W. Bush.
Ah, yes.
And I said, what do you think? And he said, it's a disaster. So he knew, even he knew, that the Buchanan opposition was a problem.
Yes.
But, of course, it was also a problem with the fellow from your state, Ross Perot.
That's right. Huge problem. Of course, that was an election, actually. That he was a third-party candidate. The others you're talking about, of course, are challenges within the party. I think Buchanan was very damaging to President Bush, and I remember Senator Kennedy when he went after President Carter. That was also very damaging. I remember you were talking about the Buchanan speech. I remember watching the Kennedy speech on television back in 1980, and he clearly had that convention. I mean, the emotions were with him, but they couldn't give it to him. They had to give it to President Carter. I don't know if that was the case in the convention that you were in Houston, because Bush was still popular, but within the party, that is. But I remember watching Buchanan on television, and there was a lot of energy in that crowd for him, Barry.
Yes. And we also need to make a quick mention of a possibility now. They call it the No Labels Party. It's a centrist party that's made up of moderates, Democrats, and Republicans. And they are already getting on the ballot in individual states. And they've got the Democrats really worried because the No Labels Party is much more likely to hurt the Democratic candidate than the Republican candidate. Now, for example, if Mr. Trump is on the ticket, there will be a lot of anti-Trump Republicans voting.
Yes.
And voting for Biden, they'll vote for the No Labels candidate. So it's going to be complicated. And as with the crisis we're just going through now, with the banking crisis, anything can happen in this particular domestic and international environment in this period of time.
Let me ask you one question before we get to the Republicans. You know Joe Biden, I mean, from a journalist standpoint, you wrote about him many years ago. You know him quite well, or at least better than most people do.
I knew him. I spent a lot of time with him in the late 80s, mid-80s. I actually spent quite a bit of time with him and saw him up close.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. So my point is that you at one time even wrote a column, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you wrote a column at one time predicting that he would be elected president. Wasn't that true?
In 1985. I think very first journalist outside of Delaware, anyway, to predict he would be.
The reason I'm bringing this up, Barry, is because you know, as I said, you got close to him. You wrote that column. The kind of president that he's been these last 2 years. Are you as disappointed as most people are? I mean, as many people are that he's turned out to be. You know, when you met him, when you knew him back then, he was more of a centrist kind of guy, more of a centrist Democrat. But he's become something. I mean, nobody recognizes him. At least I don't. I mean, I remember him totally different than the kind of president he's become. So I'm curious about your reaction to his presidency, having spent some time with him before, Barry.
Well, what you say is true, but also he's a lot older, and he's the oldest man who's ever been president now, and if he runs for re-election, he'll be the oldest man ever to run for president by far, or mostly by far, although Mr. Trump will be no spring chicken either, but he's not the same as he was. I know that. You know, I'm an old guy myself. I know I'm not as sharp as I was 30 years ago. And in the 1980s, he was at the top of his game, and he was a much more moderate figure. He's allowed himself to be moved pretty much to the radical side of his party in his policies with the people around him. He's just not the man he used to be,
right?
And the man most people expected him to be.
Sure, and that's my point. I agree with you. Obviously, the age factor. He's 82, I think, whatever he is. So yes, you're not going to be the same. You know, you're not going to be as quick on your feet and all of that when you're 82 than when you were 50. But it's the ideology I'm talking about. I mean, age doesn't change your ideologies. So something changed with him, and I cannot really figure it out because he's become so different than what I didn't vote for him, and yet I expected him to be a totally different kind of president. I thought he would be more of a centrist kind of man who would try to look for coalitions and rather than executive orders. And so, I mean, that's just my impression. I was just curious as to how you see him, having had the opportunity to talk with him as much as you did, Barry.
Well, he's never been an ideologue, per se, because he's been more of a centrist. So he was always capable of moving slightly to the left and slightly to the right, but because of the environment he's in, the staff he has, and the nature of the political party, Democratic Party, he's moved distinctly to the left, not necessarily where his ideology is, because, as I say, I never thought of him as any kind of an ideological president. Like, for example, Franklin Roosevelt was, or Ronald Reagan was. They were more ideological. But it doesn't change the fact that you and I and many others are very disappointed that
right.
He's sharply to the left.
Yeah. And I think it's been bad for the country, honestly. It's not just because I didn't vote for him. I think that his movement to the left has been bad for the country. I mean, that's just how I feel, that had he been more of a centrist president, he would have been better for the country. I think he would not have signed, a more centrist president would not have signed these executive orders, let's say on the border and fossil fuels and so on. So that's where my disappointment comes in, because I think it's been bad for the country, Barry. That's where I'm coming from. So, okay, let's talk about the Republicans now. Tell me about the Republicans and your analysis of the Republicans.
Well, we have several candidates in the race already. First and foremost, former President Trump, but now this former governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley. We have many imminent to be in the race. We have a businessman in the race. We have imminently to be Mr. DeSantis to be in the race, probably Mr. Pompeo, maybe Mr. Scott, Senator Scott. You may have 8 to 10 candidates, and they will make a lot of noise, and they will debate at the end of this year. But when we get to the early primaries, I think it's barring the unforeseen, I think inevitably will be a two-man race between Mr. Trump and Mr. DeSantis. And I think Mr. DeSantis is a very serious candidate at this point.
Yes, I agree with you.
But he's been very effective. His record as governor is outstanding. His leadership of his party in Florida, transforming a battleground state into a solid red state now. He's done very well in the Hispanic community, in the Jewish community, even in the Black community, certainly in the Cuban community. He's done very well among blue-collar former Democrats. And he continues to be aggressive without what some people feel are the annoying personality characteristics of Mr. Trump.
Right.
He's been very clever. He has not taken the bait from Mr. Trump. He does not directly attack him. He's staying above the fray. He won't be able to stay completely above the fray once he's in the race. The Florida legislature is about to pass a law enabling him to run for president while being governor, which can't be done now, but will be possible and likely to happen. And it'll be very interesting to see which of the, I believe the vice presidential candidate will come from one of the other presidential candidates, as is often the case. And I was thinking it was going to be Nikki Haley, but she's certainly on the attack now of Mr. Sanders, so that's making a problem for her. So we'll see what happens. It's very early on the Republican side. Things are looking good. There's a lot of people who believe that if Mr. Trump is the nominee, he can't win. I'm not so sure that's true, but I am pretty convinced that if the nominee is Mr. DeSantis, he can well win, because he has a lot of appeal among Trump voters and then to a lot of other both Republicans, independents, even Democrats.
I think that I agree with you. I think if I may just say one quick thing here before we take a break, I think the biggest difference between the Democrat, whoever the Democrat is, and the Republican is that the Democrat's going to have to, you know, deal with the record, whatever, good or bad, of the Biden administration, whether it's the economy, the international record, whatever. He's going to have to deal with that, whereas the Republican, being outside, will have the advantage of being able to criticize the record. I mean, that's always been that way, but I think this year that's even more prominent, it seems to me. One thing DeSantis can do, and I've been thinking about this, Barry, I'd like to get your reaction. What I think one thing Governor DeSantis could do is actually crack or put the Republicans in a position where they can actually win the popular vote, not just the Electoral College, but the popular vote. I mean, not by huge numbers, but he could be the first Republican since George W. Bush to actually crack the 50% of the popular vote, Barry.
He could. He could. We saw in 2020, even though the result was not as the big red wave that many of us, you and I and not many others, thought would happen, nevertheless, several million more Republicans voted than Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And in places like California and New York, the margins that Democrats usually had was severely reduced. In states like Florida, it actually was big margins accumulated by Republicans. So someone like Mr. DeSantis, with a strong vice presidential candidate and presumably against a Biden-Harris ticket, could conceivably field a vote. And if that's true, it would be a landslide in the Electoral College vote.
Yes, right. Oh, sure. I agree. I mean, if they could pick up New Jersey, for example, or Pennsylvania, that would drive those electoral votes over 300 quite easily. As well. Barry, let's take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. continue our conversation with our good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. Barry, a very distinguished journalist with a long track record of writing about politics. And Barry, you mentioned a minute ago that you had been at the 1992 GOP convention in Houston. Were you at any other conventions, or was that the only one, or do you recall any others?
Oh, no. From 1988 through 2008, I went to almost all the conventions, both Republican and Democrat.
Well, the one in Minnesota must have been very easy for you, the one in St. Paul, right, when the GOP in 2008, that would have been easy for you, that you were right there, right?
Right. That was very easy because I didn't have to get a hotel, and I had my own car.
That's right.
And I went.
That's right.
Wonderful things. Yeah. But I went to my first convention was the 88 Democratic Convention in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
I got my credentials for my first session at the Atlanta Convention Center. And as I walked in, Assembly was booing the speaker. And I thought, what's going on? I thought this was going to be the nomination for Mr. Dukakis. Why are they booing? And guess who they were booing?
Let me take a guess. Bill Clinton, because he was speaking too long.
Yes, he was nominating.
That's right.
I went and got a copy of the speech.
Right.
So I'd have a record of it. Because I didn't hear the whole thing, but it was amazing. And that was my very first convention, my first time in Atlanta, which is a beautiful city.
Yes.
And it was very interesting. And then, of course, I went to the 88 Republican Convention, 92 conventions, 96 conventions. I went to 1,000 convention, and I went to, I believe I went to a 2004, and I only went to one convention in 2008, the one in Minneapolis,
right.
St. Paul.
So you went to the George W. To both conventions, and when George W. Bush was nominated and renominated, you were there at both of those, right?
I believe, yes.
Yeah. I think the reference that you're making to Mr. Clinton's speech, if I recall, because I was watching it, and I think he was going on and on and on. I was watching it on TV, of course. And he was going on and on and on and wouldn't stop, you know. And then at the very end, he says, in conclusion. And then that's when everybody started applauding. That's what I remember.
Yes. But he made a comeback. He went on. He was a joke on national TV next 60 days. And then he went on The Tonight Show and very cleverly fixed it.
Right. No, he was very telegenic and very effective in communications. Also had the good fortune that Ross Perot was running, but that's for another show. Now let's look at the next topic here that we have. The Senate and the House. I know it's early again for both of those, but what are you thinking about 2024 as far as the House and the Senate, Barry?
Well, the Senate is a lot clearer because, as you know, state races, there's only a third of the Senate is up. More than twice as many Democrats are up than Republicans. In fact, there's 11 Democratic seats up, or excuse me, Republican seats up, and not even one of them is at this point considered vulnerable. Whereas of the 23 or 24 Democratic seats, 8 to 10 are vulnerable. So it looks, the prospects are good, except when we learned in 2022, just because you have an on-paper advantage, you never can take an election for granted, especially in these times. So even though I think it's highly advantageous for the Republicans and they're likely from this point to win back control, you can't be sure because things can happen on the House side.
No, I was just going to say one quick thing. The three Republican There's three that I see very favorable for the Republicans. I'm sure there's more, but the three that I have identified are Montana, West Virginia, and Ohio. Those three are the ones that I've identified. Pennsylvania could be a possibility, but there again, I mean, you know, it depends who they pick to run. You know, they made a big mistake, I think, the last time with who they picked. But Montana, well, West Virginia, and Ohio, I think, are very good possibilities, Barry.
Well, I think that there's even more. But,
right.
For example, Pennsylvania, for initial poll, has this guy Mastriani, who ran for governor and who was a disaster as a Republican candidate. He's leading David McCormick, who was a very good candidate, for the Senate Republican nomination. If the Republican voters do that again, they haven't got a chance.
Right, right. I agree.
Bob Casey. So
I agree with you.
Candidates matter, and that's so that's one of the factors that will determine how well Republicans do. Ohio is actually a lot more difficult than you think, because Sherrod Brown is one of those candidates, like Mr. Tester in Montana, despite the fact that the state is clearly Republican, they win the Senate races. And so it's going to be a very much more problematic. But I think that clearly there's some possibility in Arizona, where Senator Sistema has put herself in a corner by becoming an independent, and she will not win the Democratic nomination. So her only chance to win, as I wrote in one of my pieces, was to become a Republican. But that is not clear that she can pull that off, because in the polling, in a three-way race with a Republican, a Democrat, and her as an independent, she comes in third. So there are a lot of complications. Again, you have to be very careful, even in with all the advantages that the Republicans have on paper, you can't be sure they will be able to win the necessary two or three or more seats to take control.
Right. Looking back at 2022, for me, the biggest disappointment of that election was what happened in Nevada with the attorney general, who was defeated by a very small margin. Could he be running again? All of a sudden, I'm blanking out on his name. But his father was also a very famous Republican out of Arizona or Nevada. My goodness, I cannot. His name escapes me all of a sudden. But you know who I'm talking about in Nevada.
Yes.
Could he win? Could he run again? Because I think he is a fantastic candidate, tremendous future, and maybe he could win the next time around.
He could. I think just
Laxalt. Now, that's it. I'm sorry. Forgive me. For a minute there, I couldn't think of his name. Laxalt. Adam Laxalt. I think he'd be a great candidate.
Well, of course, Harry Reid is no longer there, and he was a lot of the reason why Democrats kept winning. It's not going to be a good year for any Democratic incumbent, in my view, barring the unforeseen. And so he could be a very, very successful candidate. There's many other places. It's in the House where the picture is a lot less clear. And one of the reasons it's less clear is, first of all, there's all the seats are up. And except for Ohio and North Carolina, all the redistricting has been done. We know who the incumbents are going to be in the districts. I think when you look at it objectively, there's a slight advantage for the Republicans to increase their margin. I don't know by how much, but they could also lose control. They only have a 4-vote margin, 222 to 213. And so the House races are largely still yet unformed. We don't know who the nominees are. Whereas in the Senate races, you have to declare your candidacy very early in order to be able to raise the kind of money you need, especially if you're a challenger. So those races are much further along, the Senate races, although many of them are still unformed and we don't know who the nominees are going to be. But in the House, we certainly don't know who many of them are going to be. And there will be more retirements by incumbents in both parties, both in the Senate and House. So that creates another aspect of uncertainty. Case of Ohio, there's 10 Republicans and only 5 Democrats currently. So it isn't likely that the redistricting will change that very much. I don't know about North Carolina. That's now currently split 7-7, although one of the districts was a district Mr. Trump carried. But those are going to be redistricted, and there could be some changes. But I think there's a slight advantage going in, as of this point, for the Republicans, especially in light of the presidential race. But, again, I caution, as we learned in 2022, we thought it was going to be a much more decisive
right.
election, and it didn't happen.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing is, the main issue that helped Democrats in races across the country was the abortion issue.
Right.
That will be, as by any means, as serious an issue in 2024, since that's been resolved in
right.
many cases. And Republicans are going to be very careful about how they handle it. But you never know what new issues may appear.
Right.
And that could go both ways. You could have issues that work against Democrats or work issues that go for them.
Right.
But again, it was voters. You know, we depend a lot on polling and on pundit speculation like you and I do. Fact of the matter is, as I've already said, I've made it a constant theme in my writing, do not second-guess the voters before an election.
Right. No, I agree with you. I mean, look, 2022, I was expecting a different turnout, as you know. But I think I underestimated the abortion issue, not so much the issue itself, because it was, but the way it was handled in certain states. Because it didn't work here in Texas. It didn't work in Florida. It didn't work in Ohio. But it did work in Michigan and Minnesota, your home state. And I think there the Democrats were very effective in using that issue. But I don't think that's going to fly in 2024 because the genius of the Supreme Court was ascended to the states. And most of the states have already settled the issue. You have in Minnesota. They have in other states. So really, it's not going to be an issue because if you believe in abortion and you live in Minnesota, for example, you already have it. You already have your own version of Roe v. Wade. So what are you going to get excited about, Barry?
Right. Well, and there will also be the economic circumstances
yes.
in the summer and fall. And so far, the indications are they don't look too good.
No.
You never know.
You never know. You're exactly right. I've learned that from you. You never know. You got to be careful with these predictions. I'll close by telling you a little story. I got an invitation a few weeks ago to speak with Telemundo here locally, and they asked me what's going to happen in 2024, and I said, you know, I have a very good friend named Barry up in Minnesota, and he always tells me to be very cautious with predictions. So I said to her, I said to the interviewer, tell me what you're going to be asking me about in September and October, and I'll tell you what the issues are going to be in 2024. And I really feel that way, Barry. When I know what we're going to be talking about in 2024, we will know that in the fall and early winter a year from now. I think we'll have a much better idea of what the voters will choose in 2024. If things are going well, then the Biden team has a good chance. But if things are not going well, then, of course, the GOP team has a chance. But we don't know that yet, Barry. That's the thing. We don't really know.
International situation.
Yes.
For example, how will the Ukraine issue go? As you notice, as you have noticed in the last few weeks, Republicans, whereas they don't sympathize with Putin and they think he's a bully and they're sympathetic with the Ukrainians, there's limits can do in terms of its help, financial and military. We've given enormous amounts of money and materiel. We're lowering our own defense capabilities, and there is an increasing reluctance to make massive contributions. I've been saying all along that the president, although President Biden did essentially the right thing in terms of supporting Ukraine, he did it in such a gradual fashion that they were not, and this also, Europeans did the same thing, that when they finally realized what a threat the invasion of Ukraine was, it was already a stalemate and already a very costly in terms of life and materiel and economic well-being. It was already well along. Mm-hmm. And so now that going into the spring, where we may see the stalemate continue, we have a problem,
right,
the international level. And that's only one of the problems. The United States has to deal with the challenge of China, both economically and militarily. We have South America. We have the competition for relationships in Africa, so because China's making its move there and in the Middle East. And we have the whole issue of the Middle East, which we haven't talked about, which is still unresolved.
Right, and you also have the situation in Mexico, which is troubling, I'll put it that way. Troubling, what's happening in Mexico.
And then, as we learned with this banking crisis, there's always the crisis we don't know about that suddenly appears. So there's a lot of uncertainty. My basic message is this. As of now, it looks like there's certain on-paper advantages in the U.S. Senate, House, and presidential races. But those advantages can, as has happened in the past, can disappear.
Right.
So much needs to be decided. And one of the major things that needs to be decided is who's going to be on the Democratic ticket.
Right.
Are they going to have another Biden-Harris ticket, which, I mean, you never say never because they won once. So it's always possible they could win. But that's maybe their weakest ticket, although I'm hard-pressed to name a stronger ticket at this point.
That's right. That's right.
It's very complicated. We'll need to discuss this several times again over the coming months.
No, and the invitation is always there anytime you want to do it. All you got to do is contact me and we'll do it. I think we should maybe take a look at all of this maybe in the middle of June, like around July 4th, let's say. Give and take a few weeks, July 4th, because I think in the summertime, unless something happens before that, but I think assuming things stay the way they are, I think we will know a lot more about the economy and a lot more about things in the summer, just as the campaigns are heating up. That's the other thing, too, that I think you'll see the campaigns begin to take form. But as always, Barry, it's a great honor to have you on the show, and it's a great honor to have you. And I just all I can say is enjoy your Yankees in 2023, and we'll be in touch hopefully again in a few months.
Looking forward to it.
All right, my friend. Have a good evening there in Minnesota. Do you have a fireplace? Do you use it much? I'm curious.
No, I don't have a fireplace.
Okay, because we use it a lot here in Texas.
Anyway.
As incredible as that may sound, we actually use the fireplace a lot in Texas.
Well, I hope you have one.
Okay, we do. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful time, and thank you so much for joining us. It's always an absolute pleasure to have you.
Okay, thank you.
My pleasure. Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor, always a lot of fun for me to chat with him and talk with him and get a sense of where we are. Because I subscribe to the Prairie Editor, I always recommend that you do the same thing. It's a great resource of information. Barry is very much right down the middle, which is what I like about him, and he gives it to you the way it is, or the way he sees it, which is usually the correct way. So we thank him again for joining us. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just a quick heads up. On Sunday night, we'll be chatting with George Rodriguez about the situation here in Texas. And then on Monday, we'll do our Week in Review with our good friend Bill Katz, the Urgent Agenda. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.